coming up next. It's hour number one of the Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Happy Future Tuesday, everyone. Another fine day in planet Earth, especially here in Santa Cruz. 66 out there? My goodness. Yum, yum, yum.
Not exactly bikini weather, but it's definitely a pretty nice day for a walk.
Drops cold at night, though. Mrs. Future, have you been enjoying your Thanksgiving weekend?
I did. I really had a really great time this Thanksgiving. It was full of lots of dear friends and lots of creativity, and it went by really fast.
Very smooth. I got lots of great drone shots.
Yeah.
I'm very happy about that.
You're becoming quite the drone pilot, my dear.
It's just so much fun, you know? I mean, I feel like Cecil B. DeMille or...
Are you ready for your close-up? Well, let me fly into your face.
Yeah.
Well, no, actually, you're very controlled with it. I like the way you have it land in your hand. You know,
thank you.
Very.
Thank you. I like the big cinematic look. I like the sandstone cliffs up in Boulder Creek, things like that. They look like they're huge. You know, you get the right angle, you can make local things look epic.
Right.
Not that they aren't, but even more so.
Yeah. Well, we had a lot of fun on Friday night over the weekend when they lit the Christmas tree at Boulder Creek.
Oh, yeah.
You were on duty with your drone, getting the moment.
That's true. Yeah. There's a countdown at 6 o'clock on Friday. Our local mechanic, Chris, organizes a lot of the stuff. And they were going to turn on the Christmas tree. And I wanted to get the shot of the Christmas tree on from the air. And I just barely made it. It was close, but it looked good.
A little dicey during the countdown.
I'm telling
you. All of a sudden, everything.
And we had just rushed in from seeing Riverdance over in San Jose, which was, we definitely recommend. That was an awesome.
Thank you. My sister, she has a subscription to the theater over there
in
San Jose.
Center for Performing Arts, yeah.
Yeah. So we were very lucky to have tickets to that wonderful show. Really enjoyed that a lot.
So now we've got the historic event going on in Paris. We have an agent there, actually.
That's right. Little Dr. Future Show spy is there at the Paris conference.
Yes, he'll probably be reporting next Tuesday.
Yeah, we'll get it fresh from his lips next week when he gets back.
And there's a historic summit on gene editing and designer babies going on in Washington, D.C. right now.
Oh, how interesting. What do you know about that?
Well, it's a time where genetic engineering is hitting new strides with the new editing tools, which we have mentioned many times on the show, the CRISPR-Cas9 technologies. Stunningly fast, flexible way to manipulate the code of life itself. It's so revolutionary that hundreds of scientists and policymakers and President's science advisor are gathered today in Washington for the start of a three-day summit on the implications of this amazing technology.
Wow. You know, so give some of the details. Besides that they're gathering, what is the state of the art in genetic mutation regulation, and what is the scientific community focusing on at this Washington, D.C. conference?
The overriding question is, when, if ever, will we want to use gene editing to change human inheritance?
That's everybody's big fear. I mean, remember the movie Gattaca, where if you didn't get genetically modified for giving birth to your child was considered inferior because you were just playing Russian roulette.
Yes, no more Russian roulette with this. As a matter of fact, the Chinese have been very aggressive in using CRISPR. And one team made news this year when it reported results from experiments on human embryos.
Mm-hmm. What are they doing over there?
What they're finding is that it's difficult to manipulate the genes of an ovum. It's much easier to manipulate the genes of sperm.
This is not surprising. It's like the mother already has the blueprint. You don't want to mess with the blueprint. And then the sperm, you've got a gazillion of them anyway, and then the egg is going to pick its favorite one. I'm sure that those dynamics are playing into the strategies that these experimenters are looking at.
Yes. The ethicists are very worried about the slippery slope towards eugenics with this whole field.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, the whole idea that we'll be doing everything with a test tube instead of really honoring Mother Nature.
Yet, many of the scientists attending this Washington meeting won't be there to ban the technology at all, but to trade tips on how to make it better and how to do it right. One scientist who is leading that pack is a guy named Jinsan Lee. He's a biologist at the Shanghai Institute for Biological Sciences. Earlier this year, he had managed to use CRISPR to edit a gene that causes eye cataracts in mice, creating healthy newborn animals with 100% success.
Okay, so he cured mice cataracts.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the way he did it was to avoid embryos. Instead of editing embryos, he edited spermatogonial stem cells, mm-hmm. those stem cells that grow sperm. Mm-hmm. They're the factory cells that make sperm, essentially. And by gene editing mouse sperm cells first and then using the corrected sperm to make embryos, the mice came out perfect every time.
Right.
Every
okay.
time.
So they sorted for, apparently, there's a very low rate of effective mutation and a very high rate of unanticipated mutation. This is mouse studies, right?
Yeah.
They're not working with humans.
Not yet, no. Mm-hmm. No, they anticipate they will. I think at the next step.
I'm sure. I'm sure that's the holy grail of genetic research is to become the arbiter of the human genome.
Yes. And since that CRISPR edits only work about 20% of the time, it makes more sense to edit sperm than it does eggs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now talk about the process. Like, what are they doing to create and edit these sperm? And what do they know that we should be aware of?
It's a long way to go before they really get to humans. It'll probably be like 5 years or so. The CRISPR-Cas9 stuff is readily available. It doesn't require an absolute genius to be able to do this sort of thing.
All right. I'm sure we've got a lot more to share about this, and folks may be interested to call in and talk about it. This is the Dr. Future Show. We're going to take a little short break, talk to our sponsors. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Now, to finish up on this conference going on in Washington on human genetics and gene editing, George Church, a Harvard Medical School geneticist, he's published some of the earliest papers on the use of this CRISPR technology on mammalian cells. He pointed out that people in this field actually have been doing genetic modification for decades. And there are already 2,000 gene therapy trials underway, none of which are using CRISPR. CRISPR is new.
Yeah, CRISPR is really just kind of a new entry into this field because it works with a very specific type of splicing technique that allows them to control.
It's much easier to use. And what's really different, he says, is the cost. It's about 1,000 times cheaper for an ordinary academic scientist to do it. Mm-hmm. And that in and of itself could be a game changer. Mm-hmm. Reporter asked Dr. Church, how long would it be before humans have wings? And you know what he said? Without missing a beat? He says, we already have 747s, way better than wings.
Good answer. Why try and do it complicated with genetic research when you can just jump into an airplane? I like that. I like that attitude. Let's take the easy way.
Totally, yeah.
Right. I mean, we've already had wings for 100 years then, by that count.
Yeah. You know, well, some would argue that our technology is an extension of our bodies already.
Sure.
That we already are modifying. Now it's just a matter of modifying the biology as well. It's just another step in our evolution of modifying the environment or ourselves to play in the environment.
Well, it's a very interesting perspective because I've been wondering, when did the modern era begin and what characterized it? If we want to talk about it from the point of view of technology, we could argue that the modern age of technology has been going for at least a few hundred years. Right?
It's not exactly a new thing. It's a speeding up of processes that are already underway.
Yeah, absolutely. And not just speeding up, but also going into more granular awareness and into an extended version of our range, because we can look further into deep space. We can look deeper into a cell or a molecule. We can be more specific with the genetic approach to a human curative strategy. So really, we're just dealing with like a whole lot more detail and a whole lot more awareness of what is possible than we've ever had before.
Absolutely.
But there are still a lot of simple solutions.
Yeah. And that said, down at the University of California in the basement insectiary, they have been modifying the genes of mosquitoes at the University of California, Irvine.
Boy, nobody probably feels sorry for those mosquitoes.
They're being born from fathers with fluorescent red eyes and mothers with normal ones.
Oh, so the scientists actually love these mosquitoes.
Well, they've been breeding them, yeah. You know, by normal genetics, half of them would have fluorescent red eyes and half normal ones. Instead, as they counted them, 99% had glowing eyes.
Boy, and that's what they were trying to do?
Yeah, they were doing some experiments using a new technology called a gene drive.
A gene drive.
Gene drive.
What's a gene drive do?
It's built using the CRISPR-Cas9 technology.
I see.
A functioning gene drive in mosquitoes is something people have theoreticized about, but now it looks like they will be effective. Well, my understanding of this, it looks like the gene drives are a way in which you can get the mosquito to carry a load of molecules that take up the space that normally would, for that load, it takes the place of, say, a disease. So you have malaria mosquitoes. If you create a cargo that the mosquitoes would rather carry, then they won't be able to pick up the malaria cargo.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it also seems to indicate that these mutated genes were given a specific curative that you could say it replaced the malaria. It also seems like what it does is it prevents the malaria virus from spreading inside the mosquito.
It stops it from being carried.
Yes. So very interesting approach. And so they've actually successfully accomplished this goal of proving that with the CRISPR-Cas9 technology, they can address malaria at the level of the genes of the mosquito. Now the question is, do we want to?
And whether or not it's safe enough. One of the things people are worrying about is whether or not the researchers at the university are using enough safety measures. Like right now they're using locked doors and closed cages. And is that enough? So they're thinking that maybe they should install a genetic reversal drive so that the change can be undone genetically.
Oh boy, that sounds like a real Pandora's box.
Because an accidental release of some of these experimental mosquitoes could be a disaster with devastating consequences.
Well, yeah, but also sending out like a reverse mutant gene
to get rid of the other ones.
Sounds like an even bigger disaster.
It could be, right? So no gene drive mosquito should be released without popular support is what they're realizing.
Well, it really is a huge conversation about what should we do with this level of scientific research. Now that we know that we can, are there situations where we want to?
Well, here's one solution. They're saying, well, we'll study mosquitoes that would, if they escape, they wouldn't survive in this environment in California. You're used to the Congo or something.
I think everybody in California is going to say, not in my backyard. Please don't do that experiment here.
Well,
isn't there someplace else that has a lot more mosquito problems?
People worry about...
People don't seem to have malaria here.
People worry about the news headlines about the next weapon of mass destruction being a bioweapon.
Yeah.
And the specter of insect terrorism comes to mind with mosquitoes that kill people with toxins and diseases. And well, it's probably nonsense.
I
say that out because...
Don't candy coat it.
Well, look. Even if insect weapons were possible, in practice, it's unlikely a terrorist organization would invest millions in an advanced genetic engineering program. Unlikely.
Sure.
There are easier ways to kill people, you know?
This is back to we've already got wings.
If you're going to be a bad guy. There's an interesting article we have on this whole topic from MIT's Technology Review.
Right.
Yeah, to go into more detail.
So the myth of the maniacal bad guy who has a desire to harm the world, you're saying that that's not where the real threat is?
No, I don't think so. I think maybe down the line, as it gets easier to do, if you can start doing this sort of thing in like high school labs, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, it's still high-level university environments, but it is getting easier. And there is a point where this type of technology becomes trivial. And at that point, then we're at the whim of the consciousness of the people who are making the tools.
Yeah, then basically genetic mutation is sort of like the modern gun.
Yeah, but it's a lot easier to make guns right now than it is to, or to get
guns. We're always going to be vulnerable to crazy people who have bad ideas and use the state-of-the-art technology.
You know where this kind of evil thinking is really useful? Hollywood. Cautionary tales for what could happen, you know, very popular scripting ideas along these lines. So I think we'll probably see some of
that. So we have to just keep sharpening our tools of discernment so that we know the difference between fantasy and reality.
I try to keep you focused on, you know, what's real here. I mean, even though, you know, this is a show about the future, we try to look at how long, how down the line are some of these ideas, you know, how much should we worry now?
Let's worry first and avoid the rush, and maybe we can avoid some of the problems that would come about if we didn't worry at all.
Yeah, it'll get us thinking about it. But again, it's like the drones. In my opinion, we need to really look at all the great things that we can do with this technology rather than just the cautionary tales.
Absolutely.
You know, that gets the headlines, yes, but... But
that's
the fact that you can cure any number of inherited diseases, that you don't have to have the diseases of your parents or your grandparents, I mean, that's big.
Yeah. Yeah, a truly intelligent species will be able to get the best of our intelligence and make it valuable for the whole species.
Yeah, I mean, this will seem like the Dark Ages once we understand the importance of this, you know, why we don't have perfect health in genetically. Remember the time when we used to be at the whim of wild seeds in the field? No longer. You know, it's an evolution of our consciousness.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Well, let's see. We've got a very short window here before we go to
news
break.
Since we are dealing with the whole bio realm, I wanted to point out in our drfutureshow.com/links page, we have a very good article on bugs as drugs. I wanted to mention that because essentially our human body is teeming with trillions of microbes, bacteria, viruses, and fungi. Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Sorry about that. I started to get into this article and time went out the window.
Yeah, time flies when you're Dr. Future, huh?
I should know better.
I try to tell you, honey. Tick, 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 tick.
I need a countdown. We'll get into that later. I was talking about how bugs are drugs.
Yes. What do you mean by that?
What I mean by that is you got to think of these organisms. I'm not talking insects. I'm talking about microbes, but insects you could think of this way too. As living organisms that take in molecules and excrete molecules. So they're changing the form of these molecules, making them more sophisticated very often, because that's what living systems do. They break things down too. And literally, we are teamed with millions of microbes. There's like 10 microbes for every human cell in our system. Bacteria, viruses, fungi at any moment. It amounts to about 3 pounds or so of these little micro hitchhikers and colonies in our skin, our groin, our mouths, our sinuses. And most of them in this microbial ecosystem in our bodies, the largest, the most complex, is in the gut, the gut bugs. They're being perceived as a new frontier of a multi-billion dollar bioceutical industry.
Wait a minute. You mean the bugs that are already there?
They're already in us. For example, they have so many different capabilities of creating molecules. They can create literally thousands of different drugs that perhaps we might need in our system. Mm-hmm. So instead of taking them orally, we would take something that would feed the right microorganisms in our body to excrete the right stuff that would create the drugs.
This is such a game changer. You know, instead of the idea that we're infected by germs and we have to kill everything in our entire immune system, we're talking about the fact that our whole bioterrain is alive and we need to know what to feed it so that it can take care of itself.
Not just take care of itself, but us.
Yeah, us. Itself.
Right? So it excretes.
I mean, we're the host of this 3 pounds of ecosystem,
first
right?
of all, we have the right colonies, you know, the right kinds of microbes in our system. Get rid of the bad ones and have the right ones. And then feed the right ones the right stuff. And then that they create the right excretions, which include drugs, for regulating our biosystems.
Brave new world in medicine.
Yeah. So manipulating the biome for health. It's been going on for a while in what we mostly know of as the probiotics industry. It's about a $30 billion a year industry right now. That's mostly supplements.
Kombucha foods. Has become my new favorite drink.
Yogurt.
That's right.
Kombucha.
Anything fermented, right? Anything that's alive when you drink it. And then it's there to help eat you.
You know, we should have Ben Fuchs on sometime on this. I think he'd be a good guy. He thinks about this stuff all the time.
Yeah.
The thing is that because this is such a new area, the probiotics world, it's unregulated, unsupported. There's a lot of claims made. There's a lot of stuff that's being done that there's no real science behind it. So it's a messy area right now. And that's kind of a good thing because that's a frontier that allows us to experiment with the field.
Hmm.
For years, over-the-counter probiotics, you know, there's a lot of hype, but now there's more and more science in it, and they're beginning to get a handle on a number of physical conditions. You know what the first ones might be?
I can guess.
Type 2 diabetes.
Oh, right. I was just going to say, things involving what you eat.
Yes.
Eating disorders. Diabetes is certainly a classic.
Irritable bowel syndrome. Autism.
Autism?
Uh-huh.
Oh.
Parkinson's.
What is the relationship?
Uh-huh. Depression. All of these are related to gut's resonance. And there are various approaches that have been playing with the gut, including one of our listeners, Gregory, has often brought up the fecal implants, which have been refined over the years to begin to be used for treating more specific microbugs.
Yes, I'm not looking at the article right now, but I did read this one earlier, and they had some very unique ideas for the whole idea of where fecal implants are going, right?
So yes.
It's part of your digestive system and...
Well, that's the idea, is to have the right colonies, right? You want to get rid... Certain microbes will create more diabetic conditions than others.
Mm-hmm.
This is a whole new thing. So you basically need to get your gut analyzed, for mm-hmm. starters, to see what you actually have there. There's a growing ecosystem of medical practitioners that do that sort of thing.
Absolutely. Ben Fuchs has several commercials about how probiotics is where you begin your journey back to good health if you're dealing with any kind of condition. It starts in the gut.
But if I could take something that would change the conditions of my colon so that issues of diabetes and obesity don't happen, then why not? It would be as important as diet and, well, that would be part of the diet and exercise routines, right, of better health. It would be the diet for your microbiome as well as for your human tissues.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the thing. It's just paying attention to the microbiome as another aspect of ourselves for optimal health.
Mm-hmm.
The exciting news here is that the chemical explorations are such that you can literally create a lot of really expensive drugs without having to buy them. You could be able to create them inside the body itself. That is the potential future for this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because literally, these are nanobiotech factories, assembling and reassembling molecules, molecular reassembly factories. And once we understand more exactly what they're converting to what, we can play with that to create the chemicals we need in our bodies,
mm-hmm.
or need for treating specific conditions even.
Right. Yeah, this article is absolutely great in terms of explaining what's going on with the research into probiotics and where the most promising research is likely to happen. There's a company called Second Genome, sort of like Second Life, Second Genome.
Yeah, right.
And they're looking to target just a few diseases, diabetes being one of them, with their gut health secrets. What they're trying to do is profile the genes that seem to be involved through big data techniques.
They're working on short-chain fatty acids, right? Mm-hmm. That's the Second Genome. It's a class of chemicals, short-term fatty acids. They are constantly produced as gut microbes break down starchy foods.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem to regulate the immune system. And they also affect the integrity of our brainwaves. And whole bunches of other metabolic pathways we're just discovering. Yeah, they're an example of a group that's beginning to take a lot of these ideas of gut bug bioactives, I think they call them,
mm-hmm.
and create products from it.
Yeah, so one example that they have that's very interesting is trying to change the microbiome with diet after antibiotics. One of their researchers is talking about the fact that you could change the microbiome in less than a week. And their team is working on a molecule called sialic acid, which prevents harmful bacteria from taking over the gut after heavy antibiotic use. So, you know, a lot of people get sick after antibiotics because they've taken out their immune system.
That's true. You could look at how to do gut implants that would counteract the side effects of antibiotics.
Yeah. So that's what they're talking about when they are saying bugs as drugs, you know, is these probiotic bugs
it can return
drugs.
You to better health.
Right.
Especially after you've been sick for a while.
Yeah.
It seems that would be a good target audience for that.
Right. My favorite line in this article, I hope is not going to be too gross for people, but it's hilarious.
Yes.
We're talking about the fact that there's a company called Open Biome, which is based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And what are they doing?
What?
They are providing frozen stool samples from healthy pre-screened individuals to hospitals.
Yes. Stool samples.
Yes, these samples are put into the colons of people who are suffering from deadly and otherwise untreatable diseases, in particular a gut infection called Clostridium difficile, which kills 14,000 Americans each year.
So you're saying you can cure this by consuming these poop pills?
Well, there you go. That's the hilarious thing that they're talking about. According to a 2011 review of 317 patients, these fecal transplants cleared up the infection in 92% of the cases. So it's otherwise untreatable, right? So a little healthy fecal microbiome improvement.
I guess if you can get over the ooh factor, I guess it's better to be healthy than
yes.
There's actually
it's hard.
More going on than smell there.
Yes, yes, yes. To paraphrase the thing here, it's hard not to give a crap about swallowing poop pills. Like, just think about that. That's such a funny idea. But anyway, it could be good for you.
Yes, yes. I think it's a great focus for our health. And I would be surprised if Doc Wallach buys a few of these companies as they come online.
Yes. Well, they're not going to be having us swallow that stuff because obviously that could be very unhealthy.
No, that's not
But they're looking for ways to get our own guts to generate those healthy bacteria. So that's what this article is all about.
Bugs.
I suggest you go to drfutureshow.com and look at it. It's a very interesting educational article.
Yeah, absolutely. And so speaking of bugs, we're going to move up to a higher order on the phylum of bugs to army ants.
Army ants. Oh, I like this one.
You like
too.
This one? Oh,
yeah.
Yes. Yeah. This is a very interesting study in collective intelligence.
Okay.
That's leading to swarm robotics. Swarm robotics. Anyway, we'll talk to you about it after the break.
After the break, which I'm not quite ready to go to yet.
Okay, well, then I'll
continue here.
Dance. Okay, here we go.
Now I'm ready.
Okay.
We'll be right back. Dr. Future Show.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're going to go a little higher in the phylum here from microbes and the microbiome to ants, specifically army ants. And they're an example of a collective intelligence that has been observed by researchers from Princeton and the New Jersey Institute of Technology. Now, this is an interesting behavior in ants. Imagine, if you will, that you were an ant, okay? And you had to get from one side of a leafy bush to the other. You would probably start walking across a leaf and then jump to the next leaf and then the next leaf and try to make your way across the plant in as short a period as possible because you're trying to get to the other side. Well, the ants do that too. But what they do, sometimes two leaves are almost touching each other and they can't quite do it. They can't quite jump it. So instead of walking around, if it's within their capability, they start to exhibit a behavior where they create a living bridge. A living ant bridge that bridges the gap between the two leaves. And then the other ants go over it and use it as a bridge. Apparently, they're quite good at this, and they do it quite regularly. They create these ant bridges across leaves and other obstacles in order to carry out their work.
It's definitely one of the marvels of nature.
Yeah. So there's researchers who have been studying these living bridges, and apparently they don't have a lead ant that does it. The action of each individual coalesces into a group unit that can adapt to the terrain and operates by, you might call it, a cost-benefit ratio. They create a path over an open space up to the point where, you know, too many workers are being diverted from collecting food and prey. They do it to save energy, to basically create the simplest solution to moving stuff from point A to point B. Very interesting. I mean, can you imagine if our highways automatically built bridges across rivers and stuff like that?
Very interesting idea. And of course, what's interesting about this article, besides the ants themselves and this behavior, is that the scientists are studying it to come up with ways of programming robots, right?
That's it. We're looking at how to apply these technologies into the human domain. It's one thing for ants to create living bridges across a plant. It's another deal to create machines that do that. So we're figuring it out. An interesting thing. Hey, it looks like we have a few visitors in the Dr. Future studio here. All right, you guys.
We're going to have a very exciting second hour.
Awesome. All right. Well, we'll get through the news here. We're going to be bringing in some very, very fun guests and music even. All right, we're going to do it.
All right, so just to close up the Army Ants article, what I found most interesting about this is that studying ants has taught the researchers that the individual ants only know their own local situation. They don't really
have very localized,
any
right.
kind of overview of, you know, where the bridge begins or ends. They just know that if they can become part of the bridge, they will, and the bridge will change itself over time so that it will go from a narrow point in a gap that has to be filled to a fatter point if it can save all of the ants from having to walk a longer route.
Yeah, they broke it down into they formed bridges across gaps that were set at angles of 12, 20, 40, and 60 degrees. Then they gauged how much travel distance the ants saved with their bridge versus the surface area of the bridge itself. And they said that 12-degree angles shaved off the most distance while taking up the fewest workers. And 60-degree angles had the highest cost-benefit ratio. Very interesting. Apparently, the ants are also willing to expend members for 20-degree angles, forming bridges up to 8 centimeters squared to decrease their travel time by almost 12 centimeters, indicating that the loss of manpower was worth the distance saved. Go figure.
Yeah. So how can we get robots to be this smart and think about how to save gas? Go a shorter distance by teaming up. That's what we're looking at, the swarm behavior.
Well, I think you pointed it out, Mrs. Future, that the idea is that they look around themselves and they look at the intelligence locally. They don't have a central nervous system. So they don't seem to need a centralized control structure to be able to do this.
Right.
So if the robots can look around them and find what they need to do in their direct environment, then they could do stuff like this.
Great. All right. So we've got all kinds of bugs in the news today. Army ants, microbiome. What else do we have here for the last 10 minutes?
Okay. There's an interesting thing that is happening in media that you probably won't hear about on most of the mainstream media here. Among internet pirates, you might say, there's a fascination with aggregation. And so there are aggregators of pirate TV streaming services where you literally have hundreds of channels and all kinds of new features for free that are appearing. We have a link to an article about this that has a link actually to one of these sites if you want to check it out for yourself. But what's interesting about these pirate TV services is that they collect live streams from around the world, from all the countries of the planet, free and pay TV channels like HBO, ESPN, Showtime, AMC, all through a single interface. So the entire planetary television, this is the kind of stuff you might want to have if you, you know, if you ran the NSA. But no, we have it as individuals. It's kind of interesting, huh?
All right, open source international TV channels. Found a site.
Yes, it's this new one is called C-Cloud TV. And their team had spent months and months and many, many hours to look at the future of what they call IPTV. And this is what they think it is.
Okay, cool. All right, I think if you gave each of these other headlines like 1 minute, this is just some great little news bits before we go to our second hour.
Sure, sweetie. What got your attention? The Apollo 16 booster crash?
Yes, there you go. I think that's pretty interesting.
The black hole that eats a star the size of our sun and burps. Is that interesting to you?
That one is very interesting to me.
Yeah, okay. Or the fact that we have a new phase of carbon that makes diamonds at room temperature. Which one you want to, you know...
Thank you. You've definitely got the 10-word news version.
Wait a minute. There's also the
stories.
One more to consider. Okay, we've got the carbon, can make diamonds now at room temperature. You have a black hole that eats a star and burps. You have the Apollo 16 booster crash. You also have, get this, ready, set, driverless race cars. Race cars that will have a championship series for the first time in 2016.
Oh, boy. The automatic cars are going to be racing each other.
Yes, it's going to be called Formula E. Formula E races. And they don't exist yet.
They don't.
They're organizers who put it together. There are groups of people interested in this. They haven't got anybody to sign up for it yet, but they're convinced that if they create the racetracks, they will come. Mm-hmm. And they're probably right. I would say, from what I've seen with racing drones, that racing autonomous cars is unnatural.
I think this is a very good time to bring on our guest for the next hour.
Just to tease us for the next hour?
Just to tease us. Well, he's been to a lot of these kind of technology advance contests to check out where things are going. Let's say hello, everybody. Are you ready for this?
Well,
want to say hi?
Yeah, hold on a second. You know, you're surprising everyone here, Mrs. Future.
Oh, well, that's my job. Try to keep it interesting.
Okay, let's see. Okay, I think we got him. Okay, you there?
I am here.
All right, Bruce, welcome to the studio. This is Dr. Bruce Damer in the studio for the next hour.
Fond familiar, our dear friend, Bruce.
I think this is my 9th time on the show.
Yeah, you're one of our regular irregulars.
Always full of fascinating insights about reality.
Yeah, we certainly value your perspective on things, so I'm glad you're here.
Thank you.
Yes, so driverless cars winning the race, the e-race.
Now, you thought of Bruce in the context of this?
Well, the reason I thought of Bruce is because...
I'm a driverless human.
Well, you're driven by the microbiome or what?
Yeah, we're driven by the microbiome in my gut.
Right. Yes. Well, I recall you going out to the middle of the desert for some pretty odd races that were being held over the years.
Yes. Yes, indeed. A race back through time.
You were there for the space stuff right out in the desert.
Yeah, for the Spaceship One first flight and for all kinds of weird stuff.
Yeah. I guess Sun was thinking of the autonomous races in the desert.
Yeah, that was our friend Rick Satava, who the first autonomous race totally failed. I mean, the great big truck thing slammed into a bridge abutment.
Yeah.
And the other vehicles ended up off the road. That was the DARPA Grand Challenge, the first autonomous race, yeah.
But that seemed like a pretty interesting idea to put together a challenge like that.
And DARPA figured out that the robotics community had made almost no progress in 50 years by putting these vehicles on the road. It was amazing, and it really kick-started the whole autonomous vehicle thing because they said, we've got to do this for real, guys, not just in hallways and labs.
So in a sense, then, racing is in the DNA of autonomous vehicles.
And in automobiles. I mean, automobiles advanced in the 20s and teens through racing.
Yeah, and it really does create the group mind because you've got all of these people who are all bringing their intelligence to bear, and then they're comparing notes.
But isn't it mostly been about humans racing, though, and the thrill of humans racing? I mean, we're talking autonomous vehicles here. It's like the thrill is not, it's different, maybe, I should say.
You know, the cameras be focused on the nerds who are watching the readouts, like sweating bullets, you know, but not doing anything. Because it's their code. It's their brains that are racing that wrote the code.
Yeah, they're watching the code unfold in real time.
It's like Spock's brain disembodied and put into these auto cars.
Hmm. Well, maybe that's when we should have records of their EEG activity and stuff like that.
Yes, exactly. Right? Their heart rate.
And watch the nerds get excited.
Yeah, because otherwise there's no human element. Hmm. Or put little faces on the vehicles.
There you go.
That grimace or smile.
All right, guys, listen. Yeah. What are we going to talk about in the next hour before we head out here?
Well, I wanted to ask Bruce about a little trip he's been on a sailing ship, a big ship, where he met a lot of interesting people. And the tech meetup in Santa Cruz coming tomorrow.
Tomorrow evening at Del Mar Theater, yes.
Yes, so we'll be talking about that and various related sundry items.
And we'll have a little special guest at the some point with some fantastic music with Galen Brandt and
Jim and Michael Lorne. Wow, we got some talent here.